Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. My name's Alison McCabe and I'm the Chair. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this land and pay our respect to their elders past and present. With me tonight is, to my immediate right, Mark Carlin. To my immediate left is Larissa Ozog. And to my far left is Bernard Hibbard. And we comprise the panel tonight. I don't have any apologies because we've got a full complement. Do I have any declarations of interest?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to declare that Martin Smith is knowing to me. We're members of the same local community, but I have no conflict of interest.
Thank you. I'll just note that for the record. Tonight we've got two matters for consideration. We've got the demolition and the erection of a new dwelling at 44 Balfour Road, Ostermere. That's item one. And the second item is 61 Hargraves Drive, Ostermere as well. Again, for the demolition of the existing dwelling and the erection of a new dwelling as well. Just for the record, the item number one is a matter which the panel is the consent authority, which means we're the body that makes the determination on the matter. In respect to the 61 Hargrave Drive matter, it's not a matter that the panel is the actual consent or the determining body, but it has been referred to the panel for our advice and comment, which we will provide to council officers, and they will take that into consideration when they make the final determination. We're going to be dealing with these matters in turn. Can I just remind people to turn off your mobile phones or turn them to silent? Just a reminder that the panel is being recorded, and a copy of that recording will be available on Council's website, usually in about 2 or 3 days. Also a reminder, that means that often we'll ask where you live and how your property relates to the matters that we're considering tonight, so that means some personal information will be recorded on that recording. The way we work is that we've actually had reports prepared by council officers on both matters. We've had the opportunity to read your submissions, so we've actually got copies of all the submissions, and we've actually been to the site. We've also had the opportunity to review the plans and some of the information that's been lodged with the application. So we're kind of across the proposal. What we have also is a number of people who have registered to speak. And what I do is invite those people up for each matter. Usually those who've made submissions will speak first, and then the applicant or their representatives will speak second and be given a little bit more time so in order to answer some questions. We will ask questions and take notes, and we will potentially ask questions of everybody. It's really important that on the evening you may hear things that you violently disagree with. We expect everybody to observe basic common courtesy. We don't want people making comments or about people either here or not here, or to be speaking over each other. It's important that everybody respects each other's opinions, even if you do violently disagree. This isn't a debate. This is about us understanding all the issues, and the panel is really interested in the issues, not about personalities. So it's about the issues with the application. So it's important that you direct your presentation to the panel. We're the body who actually is here to make the call on the matter. So with that, just the rules of the night is, in terms of presentation, there is usually 5 minutes for people to speak, and we'll kind of get towards the end of the about 4.5 minutes. We'll ask you to start winding up and summarising. We will hear submitters. We will then, on each matter, and then we will adjourn to formulate a decision and resolution. We won't come back into public for that. That will then turn up on Council's website again, usually within a day or two. And that will be in the case of Balfour Street, our decision, and in the case of Hargraves Drive, it'll be some comments for council to consider. So with that, I'm going to move on to item one, and just to make sure that I've got everybody here, I've got Martin Smith. Is Martin here? Martin. And then I've got Madeline Bowe from PDC Planners and Lawyers, and you're speaking, you've got a fair bit of time because you're speaking on behalf of Mr. Gorick, Ms. Shelshi, Joe Holder and Philip Bolton, Dr. Desmond McConnell and Kay McConnell and Henrietta Spaven. Is that right? Okay. And then I've got the owner, Tim Flannery and Nadine Page. You're both here. Okay. So with that, Martin, do you want to come up and talk? Yep, sit here and just make sure the blue light's on, I think.
Well, good evening and thank you for the opportunity to speak this afternoon. My name is Martin Smith. I live at number 4 Hill Street. My property directly abuts the number 44 Balfour. And in the last number of weeks, I've had a number of consultations with my immediate neighbours. So Hill Street is to the south of number 44.
So we're just trying to get orientated here. So Did your backyard?
Yes, my backyard.
Your backyard adjoins.
As does the backyard of number 2,
my
neighbour, who I've also spoken with, and I've spoken with the neighbours at number 6, who, whilst the property doesn't directly abut, they are also very interested in the development.
Yeah, okay, so we understand where you are.
Okay, so I don't consider myself to be an objector, rather a potential collaborator. However, I'm concerned about a number of aspects, and I will highlight my interest in preconditions being considered. It specifically relates to the current DA documents, which refer to the survey of the 20th of June 2016, which contains a number of qualifications, specifically that no boundary survey has been undertaken. Now, I'm particularly concerned about this as number 44 directly abuts 4 properties, such as myself, and also potential public land that is on the verge of Balfour Road. And as you've conducted a site visit, you'll see just how skinny that section of road is. So, as I say, I'm very concerned that a full survey hasn't yet been conducted, and I'd see that as a precondition before further progress is made. So that the design is based... I believe a full survey must be undertaken as a precondition prior to project starting. The other aspect of the proposal that I'm concerned about is the geotech report and its references to... and its connections to the 9-metre height restrictions. But the Douglas Partners... geotech report states that 11 metres exist in the slope between the high and low points. So I'm just wondering where the 8.625 height comes in, where that's actually being measured from. Is it the bottom of that slope, or is it 2 metres up that slope, or 3 metres up that slope? So these are the kinds of things that are concerning myself and my neighbours in Hill Street. And in particular... connection to that geotech report, I believe that a subsurface investigation would actually influence the final design and construction, specifically of the second pavilion location, and therefore the retaining wall design and placement. It's the retaining wall placement and design that specifically concerns me, as my property number 4 directly abuts, and I'm very familiar with how unstable the slope is at the back of my block. And I also had a little bit of a look at number 44, and you can visually see how much instability is in the slope and the front steps. I don't know if you noticed the front steps at number 44. So movement of the site, there's clear evidence of that. So I guess... for me and my neighbours, it's all about some preconditions that a full survey be undertaken a proper subsurface investigation is undertaken, because that will have a critical influence on the project design and construction, and I believe that to ignore those two aspects is frankly deleterious.
You've had a chance to look at the plans, haven't you? So you appreciate that retaining wall is probably a good...
Yeah, I believe that the construction of it will...
Three and a half metres back from your boundary, from that shared common boundary?
It's fair to say that I don't have an accurate picture of where that retaining wall would be placed in relation to my property.
No, that's fair. The site's
a little
bit hard to understand.
It is. Yeah. I don't go down to that back part of my property at number four because of the instability of the slope.
Yep.
I believe that the construction will be sound, but where is it going to be? Yep. And if I'm happy to have a discussion with the owner of number 44 to discuss where it will be, and you know, as I said at the outset, I could be a positive collaborator because I'd be interested in how that's going to be, and maybe there's something I can work with on it. As number 44 looks west up the creek bed, they'll see the back of my unused land. I might be keen on improving the back of that land, and maybe the retaining walls could be part of that.
Yeah, okay. Well, the current proposed retaining wall is between, I'd say, nearly three and a half metres back from your back line.
So to the north...
Yeah, it's not. It's on. Obviously,
so if this is the back of my land,
it's 3 metres in at least.
But is it there? Is it there or is it there?
Well, actually, you're number four, aren't
correct.
You? So probably runs basically. It runs along the width of number two and probably only just projects into
just a
your
tiny
line,
bit into number four,
bit.
Yeah. That's
but,
probably what I saw.
Probably, you can kind of tell that from the plans, but it means kind of overlaying and knowing where your boundary is as well.
Yes.
So it's not totally obvious.
And therefore a full site survey would be helpful to many people involved in this development.
The survey is quite good the boundaries have been compiled by Lots and DP, and which is the title details. So that's where that information has actually come from. And there is quite a lot of information in relation to ground levels. So we can understand the height of the building from ground level with a level of confidence. And just so you understand, the height's calculated like a plane. So if the land's going like that, so it has to meet the height limit at every point.
Mm-hmm.
So it's calculated across at the ground level at every point, so it always has to meet the 9 metre height limit. So it's not calculated down in the middle of the creek. It's only calculated where the building is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how you get the overall height being 8.68. Does anybody have other questions, Mr. Hill?
Okay, thank you for the opportunity to present some perspectives from Hill Street.
Thank you. Madeline, you might just help tell us where everybody is as well.
Of course, not a problem. So for the benefit of the record and the panel, my name's Madeline Bow. I'm a team member at PDC Lawyers and Planners, and we were engaged quite recently by a number of the neighbours, many of whom I understand made written submissions, which you've probably reviewed. So they are Martin Gorick, who is at 40 to 42 Balfour Road, Ostermere, and that is the property that is immediately, it would be northwest, so the next one around that bend. Ms. Corinne Shelshire at 38 Balfour Road, the next one over. Ms. Jo Holder and Mr. Philip Bolton at, 38.
38.
Bolton and Holder at 34.
34. So they're all up, we're going up.
They keep going. Yeah. Henriette Spaven is again 28. And then Desmond McDonald and Kay McDonald is 33, which is across the road. If you were there today, it's the one that's a bit further down in the gully.
Okay.
A bit further down.
And just before you get started, 40 and 42 are the property who have the benefit of the
The right of carriageway?
Right of carriageway?
Yes, so that would be registered. Well, actually, it would be it's this property
this
that has,
property
the benefit,
has the benefit.
40 to 42 has it registered on title.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, good. Rightio, we know where you are.
Okay, not a problem. So I do have the written submissions because I've been granted 15 minutes to speak on behalf of all five, but I'll go through and if you like copies, that's fine. So the first thing we wanted to discuss, and there is going to be a small part of repetition with Mr. Smith's submissions, but the first concern that we had on behalf of our clients was the lack of finality inherent in the proposed consent conditions. There were several significant considerations of the proposed development that we consider haven't been resolved and without resolution cannot be properly determined. And Council's report to the panel refers to the unresolved matters being dealt with by way of consent conditions, and we're just not certain that that's acceptable. Now, there's ample case law about, you know, finality and certainty of consent conditions. There's no need to get into that today, but that's the position at law. And without that element of finality and certainty, fundamentally, a consent fails. So as examples, and as Mr. Smith raised, the boundary survey, there wasn't one provided, and although I accept that there was some information on that, on the survey of 2016 provided, that survey specifically has that notation that warns it if there is any, if it's intended to erect any improvements along or near boundaries, either for design or building set out purposes, a boundary identification survey and or accurate boundary set out survey should be undertaken. And as far as I'm instructed, there wasn't one provided. Now, I confess we were engaged only a few days ago, so please correct me if there's something incorrect here. But in this situation, there are, and our concern is that the survey report identifies a boundary, in particular a front boundary, which may or may not be correct. And part of this proposed development includes development that comes right up to that front boundary. Now, the consent conditions contemplate that a survey is to be provided after consent, that there needs to be a survey report during demolition, excavation and construction phase, but I really think it's important that it's provided now so that Council can be certain that the variations that are going to be approved are being approved at the correct in the correct location, not being approved over the road reserve, especially for those parts of the development that come so close to that boundary, that front boundary line.
Is that the porch that you're concerned about?
The porch, also the terrace. So there's the porch is on that eastern, I guess, southeastern aspect, and the terrace on the northwestern. But even the main dwelling is 1.43 metres from that front boundary. So if we're talking, you know, 1.5 metres out, and you're building in the council in the road reserve. So I just think that's a consideration for the panel. As another example, and as Mr. Smith raised, I apologise for the repetition, but item 8A of the consent conditions contemplate that work is to be completed in accordance with Douglas Partners, and that's the geotech advice. However, their advice recommends that a detailed subsurface investigation be undertaken to provide information for the design of retaining structures, foundations and remedial works to reduce or maintain the risk of, you know, slope instability, etc. We all know the site. Now, it's accepted that the property is subject to landslip and subsidence, and given the complexity of the terrain and the size of the proposed development, I'd consider that it would be incredibly important to know how these structures are going to be supported and how the foundations are going to be implemented on the site, and that would be pivotal to the proposal. I consider that the geotechnical experts actually foresaw that, which is why their recommendations have a disclaimer of sorts that a further report needs to be obtained. In fact, I noticed on the consent conditions that item 8D specifies that the consent also refers to the applicant obtaining supplementary geotech advice. I think that's probably talking about the same thing, and contemplates modifications to the structural designs if necessary. So if there's already modifications being contemplated, I'm not sure that there's the requisite element of finality and certainty as part of this consent. Let's move on. Now, as a further example, beg my pardon, pedestrian access was something that was raised and is a concern by our clients because it appears that the plans contemplate that the main access, pedestrian access, those concrete steps you would have seen today, are due to be removed. And I looked through everything but could only find one reference on the plans that indicated that a further separate application would be made, presumably under the Roads Act, for a pedestrian access, a set of stairs to be constructed in the future.
It wasn't me. Swap them over.
Okay. So as to the stairs, the application essentially proposes that the stairs are going to be removed, but until the applicant makes a separate application to council for a new set of stairs, and that's assuming the application's made at all and council will agree to the application proposed given the complexity of the site, there's a creek, it's subject to slippage and subsidence, that this will all just be dealt with at a later time. I consider that it's inadequate or an inadequate proposal. It's a troublesome access point for pedestrians, and that the only other access is the garage, which we conducted a recent site inspection. Obviously, we did not go onto the property, but from our client's property, you can see some stairs, and they're precarious at best. But that aside, it's actually not even in compliance with the development control plan, which, pertaining to building character and form, contemplates that there does need to be access from the front to the property. And it looks like from the plans that the front is going to be on that to the road where those stairs are. And without that, I'm not sure that that there's any real certainty that that's ever going to be done. And there's no consent condition requiring the applicant to make an application in the future. So I don't know if that has actually been properly considered by council. We had a final submission in relation to a lack of finality and certainty, and that's as to the fact that item 29 of the consent conditions contemplates that the consent requires preservation and protection of the neighbouring buildings from any damage and requires underpinning support of any neighbouring buildings if appropriate. Now, there are a couple of properties that would likely be affected by the excavation works that are going to be done. Mr. Smith's is an example. Another one, number 46, which the dwelling itself is sited in close proximity to the existing dwelling. And given the terrain, the slippage, again, the subsidence, and the proposal including development on the eastern aspect of the subject land, it suggests that structural support is likely to be required. Of course, that's not for me to make that decision. I'm not a geotech expert, but I'm not certain that that has even been properly considered. And that would require third-party consents. So if that can't be achieved, perhaps what is being approved is something that cannot actually come to fruition. And I'm not certain, again, that has been properly considered by council or respectfully by the applicant in their statement of environmental effects. Moving on from finality and certainty of the consent, now the height limit, and Madam Chair, I know you addressed some comments before, and I confess that perhaps if we can just clarify this point, we can move on. Plan A.41, which has, by my reckoning, the only reference to the building height being 8.625. The point, A4.1. It's
4.1, not 8.
Sorry.
It's all right. Yep.
So, by my reckoning, the 8.625 measurement in that middle between the two pavilions is based on I'm sure it's not, but is based on what looks like an arbitrary point at the bottom there. There's no reference to it being the existing ground level. And I can see the line of natural ground towards at the bottom. If that's the line to be used, then perhaps, and it could just be that the plan's inaccurate and needs to be amended, but it's not clear to myself or our planners at our office if this is correct. And just at a rough look at this, it may be that the ridge is actually above the 9 metres, in which case, as you all know, a 4.6 variation hasn't been submitted. There could be amendments.
Appreciate you normally don't calculate your height off an elevation.
Sure, sure, and I may be correct.
You'd be looking at a
if you started to look for where you calculate a height, you'd start with the sections.
And then,
I understand what you're saying, but nobody should be trying to calculate height off an elevation.
I understand. I can't find, I guess, on the plans something that says to me that this is the correct height, even the other plans. And that, again, it might just be something that needs to be amended on the plans. But
it doesn't need to be actually shown on the plans. It needs to be something that the councils have assessed and made that consideration. And as you'd appreciate, it's kind of the overlaying of the plan, knowing the ground level at each and every point and understanding where the ridge line is.
Okay.
So I see your point about the elevation, but rest assured that the panel's not going to give any weight to a calculation off an architectural plan on an elevation.
Of course, and this is all we have to go off of the plans, but it wasn't clear to us that was correct. And that it was, in fact, under the 9-metre height line, and the concerns of our clients were that it was going to be over the 9-metre height line.
Yeah. Can I just say, sorry, I just had a quick look at that.
Mm.
So what I did was, if you look at Plan A 2.1, for example, and that's just giving you an idea of the ground floor.
Mm.
So where the library and study is at that point, for mm-hmm. example, you've got the end of the building being going in the middle of that roughly. There's RLs shown that are reflected on the ground. You've got a 36.28 RL, then you've got a 36.79. So you've got various RLs that have been taken off the survey.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just roughly take any of those, they're fairly similar, but you've got a 36.51, 28, 79, and take that back to the ridge height of 44.3. That should give you an indication at the worst point, which is down at the highest point of the building, which is that back section.
Mm.
And that's how I would have assessed it and felt fairly comfortable it's within the 9 metres going off.
And thank you for clarifying that point for me. Now, as to the proposed variations, we noted that in Council's report to the panel there were 4 variations sought and supported. Now, the statement of environmental effects only appeared to contain 2 variation statements, but I understand that Council could have drawn from the statement of environmental effects its own statements, I guess. As to the variation for the 8-metre to vary 4.1 of the DCP, because the property is obviously going to be over 8 metres, within 8 metres of the rear setback, and there's a second story proposed. Although there are site constraints, we don't consider that this is the use of site constraints as a carte blanche excuse for a second story, for example, or as an example for 4.2, the variation to those setbacks, as a reason to have that terrace and that porch so close to the front setback, or the main dwelling itself so close to the front setback. There are a number of other reasonable alternative solutions, for example, reduced size of a porch, reduced size of the terrace, a single story. There's a number of other solutions that we consider would not only achieve, would far better achieve the objectives of the DCP, but be more sympathetic to the site constraints that the applicant continually cites. Now, the character statement of Ostermere was raised in the statement of environmental effects, and this is one of our clients' key concerns, that the proposed development, given how close it will be to the into the road with those with the outdoor living spaces, the property itself, the pitch of the roof being 40 degrees, the property being a two-story development, and again quite close to the road reserve. The submission is that it's not befitting of the desired future character of Ostermere set out in the DCP. Let me just The DCP chapter specifies the impact of upper stories of a dwelling should be minimised through a combination of additional front and side setbacks from the ground floor to the dwelling. That has really only been achieved because the development proposes that a terrace extends well into the front setback. And again, we accept that there are difficult site constraints. All of our clients live in a similar difficult terrain, but they do not accept that this is a reasonable alternative solution. What is being proposed is a reasonable alternative solution to the development controls. To close, my clients wish to express that they are not opposed to development that's suitable to the site, but perhaps one that sympathises with the site constraints rather than using them as an excuse for inappropriate development, which we consider would not be in keeping with the existing or desired character of that area, in particularly Balfour Street, which has quite a distinctive character, being that you can't really see the houses from the street. And I guess what is the most concern to the clients is that a development application is being considered where there's a few factors, including the geotechnical considerations, perhaps a lack of definitive site boundaries that are being dealt with by consent conditions when perhaps they should be dealt with as part of the substantial assessment of the DA. Council's report essentially, their recommendation was it's unlikely to result in significant adverse effects on the character or amenity of the surrounding area, but the reality is I'm not sure that can be known for certain by council, the applicant, certainly not the objectives. If there is anything else I can assist with or questions, happy to, but this is essentially the breadth of my instructions.
Okay. Panel, any questions of Madeline? Just picking up on your character and the concern about the variations. If you're looking at this site, the site is constrained. It's got, and you'd be looking at trying to, I would think, minimise where building is going. Do you think it's an appropriate approach to actually look at siting the building, generally where the existing building is? It's already disturbed. It's disturbed. There's structure there.
Yeah, that's probably not an unreasonable solution. And this development extends beyond that footprint. So it could be that it remains within that existing footprint. That might be a solution that the panel thinks fit.
Yeah, but for a large proportion of the building, the approach has been to look at where structure is at the moment and create a new building using that and obviously extending it. But
sure.
And hence that's going to actually result in some kind of request for variation to boundaries. I think from our analysis, it seemed that the porch, yes, is coming close to the boundary, but the actual main part of the building appeared to be setting back further than the alignment of the existing house. Did you understand that?
Is this on the eastern perspective behind the porch?
To Balfour Street. So we just overlaid just in terms of where house is located.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it on the survey. The existing house lines up with the window, one of the windows at number 46. And then when you look at the proposed house, it actually looks like it's actually behind that. It's further behind that second window. So I just, in terms of you raised the concern about character, and I just think the form of the house is actually appears to be set back further than the existing house. But there is structures, definitely structure in front, like the porch.
Yes,
the structure
yeah.
is in front.
And you're right, it may be that there's a little bit of reduction on that part. I believe that towards the northern aspect there is more development. It is a matter for the panel, but it was stated in the Statement of Environmental Effects that, granted, it may not be a large increase in size, but nonetheless there is going to be an increased footprint that perhaps, not just wide but up as well, that perhaps is not the most is not a reasonable solution to the various variations requested.
Is your position that is your main concern about the variations tied to character, that you feel it has an impact on character? Just taking your position, what's the effect of these variations? Is it on the clients that you're...
I think it's fair to say that character is a concern. It's of course, precedent, council decides to apply it as it suits, but in this situation, it would set an not ideal precedent to build so far forward, to have that second story when there's clearly a non-compliance. And again, there are site constraints and our clients accept that. But I think largely it would go to, the surrounding area and the impact it will have on the streetscape.
Okay, thanks. No other questions? All right, thanks. Maya.
Thank you.
Thanks for that. Mr. Flannery and Ms. Page. You can both come up if you may as well do it together. Unless there's no point doing it separately. Great. You're an old hand. Otherwise we're going to...
Sure. Thank you,
Madam Chair and the panel. I think some of these matters through your questions have already been semi-discussed, but we'd like to respond to some of them. My copy of the survey at the moment is A4 and I can hardly read it, but even at A3 scale, I think it's quite small to read. Look, my understanding is that the survey undertaken did, in fact, correlate the boundaries from the deposited plan, as you mentioned. Over the years, there are many, many, many surveys that I've seen that utilise that approach. Understanding that, to me, that's a satisfactory representation of the site and the site levels. The panel may have a different view, but I'm not a surveyor. That's all I have to say in response to that matter. In respect to the geotechnical concerns with the apparent need for further work to be done, we understand that work will be done. It is necessary, as indicated in the report, that the existing dwelling is required to be demolished in order to undertake those further investigations. And, in fact, that is reflected in the conditions and the recommendations of the geotechnical report and in the conditions of the draft consent. It is absolutely my client's intention to undertake that further work, as is necessary, and it is wholly understood that structural engineering works and recommendations will be necessary in respect of this building. So there is nothing unusual that I would see in the drafting of those draft conditions. They're frequently seen, as far as I'm concerned, in unstable parts of this city that we live in terms of proposed development. In relation to the stairs, it's absolutely this situation that a future application may be made to the council through the Roads Act application process. But I just wanted to make clear that the alternative stairs are only through for safety purposes, given the existing stairs are in a state of disrepair, but there is alternative access, pedestrian access to the dwelling from the garage. So even, the footpath of the adjacent property. However, even if those stairs were not replicated or reconstructed in a different location, there is alternative access as proposed from the stair, from the garage, point of the garage to the actual dwelling house.
Can I just mention, you may have seen me today getting access to the house. The reason I sent people to those stairs that I consider very unsatisfactory is there was a wasp nest in the garage and therefore I had to remove the wasp nest with my little boy well away before I came in that way.
In relation to the character, our view is that it's an entirely complementary design to the suburb of Ostermere and also to the bushland block character. Take issue with the reference to it being inappropriate development because I see this design as being entirely appropriate. The siting, as has already been discussed, is as far as possible kept to the existing dwelling location. In fact, if we talk about differences between the building footprint, it's actually lesser, as you may have noticed, the curvilinear deck at present, quite close to the creek. The proposed building does not extend that far, so while we might be going, while the design may be closer, partially closer to the Balfour Road frontage, for example, it isn't quite as far towards the creek as the existing curvilinear deck. So there are, obviously the house that's there is an ageing dwelling. This is intended, of course, to be a more modern design and we feel complementary to the site. I think that covers most of the issues. In terms of the variation statement matter that was raised, the statement of environmental effects did include two variation statements. It was identified throughout the assessment process that the exceedance of the retaining wall by up to 400 millimetres was a non-compliance for which we later prepared a variation statement which was submitted to council, in addition to the limitation of the DCP for 8 metres from the rear boundary, which there is a very minor non-compliance because of the odd shape of the site that was also later submitted as a variation statement for that particular non-compliance. I think that addresses most of the matters, unless Tim, you wanted to indicate anything further. Okay. If there's any questions?
If I can, please. A lot's been said in the submissions about the quality of the water course and its ecological value. What's your intention with that water course, and would you object to conditions to improve its quality or protect it?
No, I wouldn't object. Well, look, the watercourse has a number of weeds in it, and I would like to remove some of those weeds over time and, you know, in a way that doesn't affect the water quality and replace them with native plants. So that's what I fully intend to do. But over time.
Just probably picking up on the two things, and you might not be able to answer me, but I'll have another look at the geotech report.
I don't have it. I don't
know. No, you don't. And as I said, I haven't read it in detail. But the way condition 29 is drafted at the moment purports to maybe require underpinning of adjoining neighbours, and that's not stuff that actually usually get to do in a DA. It's usually should be couched in protecting neighbouring properties. So I think we'll have a look at the report
might be a standard condition. I'm not sure if you might want to ask the council staff if that's a particular.
It seems to have gone a step too far. Usually it's about dilapidation reports and making sure that properties are protected, as opposed to you don't usually get to do work on adjoining properties. So we'll have to look at that. The stairs. So I understand. The plans actually show a proposed stair and calls for deletion. So while that while it's on its road reserve, it is part of this application, and we need to understand, you know, whether it's appropriate or not. It's part of the broader consideration. So if we're of a mind to approve this, it gets conditioned properly. We were a bit concerned about where it was going. It looked like it was going through the middle of two of the trees that are actually on Council's Road Reserve. And so that's just one point. And the second point is, did you guys consider hanging on to the existing alignment of the stairs that's there at the moment and need to be redone because the treads are all over the joint and it's pretty dilapidated? But was that, in terms of where you were looking for another set of stairs, did you consider hanging on to, is it where there's already the disturbance, but just fixing them up?
Look, we did look into that. The problem we have is we have a young child, and that's a blind corner on the left where those stairs come down, and it's extremely dangerous in my view. They're very, very steep, and they go straight onto the road. Whereas where we were hoping to build some stairs, as you can see on the plan, there's a much smaller slope because it's uphill, so there's fewer steps. And the one tree that would need to be removed is a weed tree, the canary palm there, which is not protected at all, so that the steps would go up where that. And where those steps are, there's a flat area of several metres. I haven't measured it exactly. So you come down the steps and you're not stepping straight out onto the roadway, which was my safety concern.
Okay. I think from our site visit, and I think it's something that's probably been missed a little bit in Council's reporting, it's important that we understand the detail, because as I said, we were trying to figure out, and it was going too close to what looked like one of the big trees. Now, that doesn't mean we got it in the right spot, but I think it's indicative of that part of the application not being resolved. While the application under the Roads Act can be something matter, we've still got to actually understand what it is doing and if it's taking out a tree or it's too close to a tree. So there's probably a little bit of a question mark over that. But that answers the question as to why you didn't hang on to the existing alignment.
Could I just say that I took it from our arborist's report that all of those trees except the weed species were protected adequately, and there's provision made, I think, for protecting all of those trees, both through the construction phase and obviously afterwards. So we would obviously be abiding by that, by those conditions.
Okay.
Can I just ask you, because some of the submissions raise the issue of where your bins or waste will go, because currently it seems like it's not on the property, or have you got a designated space for them? So we kind of are comfortable with the arrangement for the bins?
Sure. Look, at the moment, the tenant at the house has been putting the bins on our property. If you can see where the garage is there.
Yes.
There's a little area beside the garage on the northwestern side.
Yes.
That's where the bins are currently stored.
I know, but my understanding from the submissions is that's not your land there. I think there's a covenant or an easement or a...
I think that's part of our right-of-way there.
Yes.
And so they're behind the right-of-way. If you can see... Yeah, you might be able to see. But look, there is no reason that the bins have to stay there. They could be put at where that flat area is, where the stairs, if we get the new set of stairs at the base of those stairs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, so you put them in there?
Yeah. It's on our land. But then you take them across the right of way to put them onto the street frontage.
Okay. When we were there, I think and correct me also if I'm wrong, there's a line, like a string line that's been put there from the neighbour. Yeah, she's attached it, or he, to the side. Yeah. Yes, trying to denote exactly where the boundary is. So there's obviously a discrepancy in the understanding of that maybe portion of the land.
Yes, I don't think that would affect the bins in any case.
Look at conditioning that.
Sure.
Another question I have is going back to kind of character and Ostermere in the DCP, there are quite specific controls in terms of having sympathetic development. You're close to a heritage item of the railway. And I understand it's a new building, and I think there's some kind of building design elements that are quite sympathetic for that kind of bushland setting. Why, though, and no one's raised it, it's just... and it's a personal view, so I'm just asking, why a red house? Because it seems all your materials, the whole house, will be red in terms of everything.
I think that it's a more brownish colour. It's a timber and brownish. We felt that was sympathetic with the general, with the forest, the trees and the vertical. So that was about the least obtrusive colour we could choose for it. And we asked the designer specifically to make it blend in. And the pitched roofs are part of that same thing. That under it, you know, we've got tall trees all around us, so the roofs we felt suited. But also, it helps with just protecting from fallen branches and so forth. They can slide off more easily.
Okay. So the red is more of deeper maroon.
It's a brown, isn't it? Brown. I have a look? I'm not. I thought it was a.
Yeah. In the schedule, it looks quite deep red.
Okay. Sorry. Well, I'd
more. Yeah.
It's a cladding roof sheeting. Yeah, brown or red.
Yeah.
That's so the.
Well, if you look at the right-hand side one, it's got timber screens. Yeah. I don't know if it's a copy thing or whatever, but you can see if you imagine a timber screen, and move across the pallet.
Yeah.
It's the timber pallet that's sought. Perhaps the PDF.
Yeah, maybe the colouring.
PDF colouring and
okay.
But if you take the right hand one as a timber,
More feature, a deep kind of,
and you move across to the other materiality that's the intended approach.
Okay.
And could I mention at the walking along Balfour Road, there's quite a steep slope as you saw up to the house. So there's actually as a pedestrian walking in front, you won't see very much at all.
Yeah, it
immediately
is
further around the corner,
quite a bit. I understand.
You'd see it through the trees.
Looked at that colour scheme and I thought it was quite striking and quite bold.
Right.
And I thought maybe harmonising or softening it a little bit so it's not as.
I'm happy.
Just, you know.
Our intention was to harmonise as much as possible, so I'm sorry if we've struck the wrong note in terms of tone. That will be, I think, a sort of timber, which is at the moment is envisaged to be a sort of a treated pine timber, which will be, I guess, they're stained. I don't know how they're produced, but which will clad the exterior. They're fire retardant special pine timbers, which are now available on the market, apparently.
Thank you very much. Unless you wanted to say anything else, I'm going to move on to the next item. As I said, we'll kind of take on board what we've heard, go through the conditions, have a look at that Geotech report, and formulate a resolution.
Thank you.
Before we leave tonight.
Okay. Thank you very
much. So all of those people here on item one, it's no further discussion, so you can kind of go home and get some dinner. Item 2, 61 Lawrence Hargrave Drive, Ostermere. I've got Alastair Reid and Emily Reid from 59 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. If you'd like to come up and...
So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak, and thank you for coming out to our house today to see for yourselves the impact that this is going to have. We've got a couple of points that we'd like to discuss. The first is we'd really like to commend Council on the current planning of Little Ostermere. There's a lot of houses that go all array around Little Ostermere Beach, and they're all staggered so that all of the current properties enjoy the view. And this is a fantastic feature of the planning and has resulted in a vibrant, close community that's tight-knit. And if the application for 61 Lawrence Hargrave Drive was approved, this would manifestly change this staggering, and we think it would have a very detrimental effect on the community as a whole. The second thing I would like to discuss is the New South Wales Land Environment Court guidelines for view sharing and how they apply to this application. I don't believe that they've been applied appropriately in the council planning document that you've received, and I'd like to discuss some of that. The summary overall, to give it to you in a nutshell, is that the applicants could build a house with identical amenity to the one that they've currently proposed by removing the north-south offset of the two sides of the house and aligning the front of the house so there isn't a step back in it. This would give them absolutely identical amenity, would preserve the majority of our view, and we would absolutely support that application. We're not against development of this site, but we think that more intelligent design of the site can result in identical amenity without having the impact it would have on our view. To go through the Land and Environment Court guidelines that were established in Tenancy Consulting versus Warringah in 2004, New South Wales LEC 140, there are four steps that I'm sure you're aware of that they go through in terms of assessing a view, and I'm not sure that this has been applied to the document that's been given to you. So to read from the document, the first step says, the first step is the assessment of the views to be affected. Water views are more valued more highly than land views. Iconic views are valued more highly than views without icons, i.e. views of the Opera House, the Harbour Bridge, or importantly North Head. Whole views are valued more highly than partial views, i.e. a view of water in which the interface between land and water is visible is more valuable than one in which it is obscured. Now, we think for our property, we have a view of the entirety of Little Ostermere Beach. We have the interface between water and land, which is the beach, and we have several icons being the headland at Ostermere, the rock pools, the seat on top of Ostermere headland, all of which would be lost if this development would be approved. We think, according to this criteria, our views are of the highest value, so that would be how that would be assessed. The second step is to consider from which part of the property the views are obtained. Now, all of our property would be affected, but the most most affected areas, as you saw when you came out today, would be our living room and our kitchen, where we spend the majority of our time. The third step is to assess the, and I'm reading from the document again here, is to assess the extent of the impact. This should be done for the whole of the property, not just for the view that it's affected. The impact on views from living areas is more significant than from bedrooms or service areas. The views from kitchens are highly valued because people spend so much of their time in them. The impact can be assessed quantitatively, but in many cases this is meaningless. For example, it's unhelpful to say that a view loss of 20% if it includes one of the sales of the Opera House. It's usually more useful to assess the view qualitatively as negligible, minor, moderate, severe, or devastating. Now, the planning assessment states that the view impact would be considered moderate. Our view is that this is a drastic underestimation of the effect that it would have. We believe that the interpretation of the Land Environment Court guidelines would rate this impact as devastating. The view loss will be most affected in our living area and our kitchen, which are the areas of our house we spend the majority of our time in. The view loss will be almost complete from these areas and take away our breathtaking, magical view of Little Ostermere Beach. The planning assessment also seems to take a quantitative rather than a qualitative approach and seems to downplay the view loss as it's from a service area, which is directly contravenes the guidelines that say that views from kitchens are highly valued because people spend so much time in them. The fourth step of the guidelines and the final one is to assess the reasonable, so I'm quoting again here, to assess the reasonableness of the proposal that is causing the impact. And it says, the question should be asked whether a more skillful design could provide the applicant with the same development potential and amenity and reduce the impact of the views on the neighbours. Now, quite clearly to me, I'm not a surveyor and I'm not an architect, but it seems to me that if the north and south sides of the house were aligned along the front of the house where the current south side is aligned, the exact same amenity would be achieved without impacting our views. And therefore, as per the guidelines, I believe that this should be deemed an unreasonable application. The person preparing the document seemed to be going from other guidelines. They stated that the second step was to consider how reasonable it was to expect to retain views. Now, the guidelines don't, as far as I can see, talk about how reasonable it is to retain views, but they talk about whether a more skillful design could provide the same amenity with it and reduce the impact on the views of neighbours. So it's clearly possible that the same amenity could be achieved without impacting on our views, I would have thought. The planning proposal also says that the proposed dwelling of the house and associated structures are not considered unreasonable development because the proposed development is located within an R2 low-density residential zone, which permits residential development up to a maximum of 9 metres under the Wollongong Local Environment Plan. Now, this seems misuse of the term unreasonable to me. The term unreasonable was introduced in the Tenancy Consulting versus Wenga Council guidelines. And to quote that again, it says, to assess reasonableness of the proposal that is causing the impact of the view, the question should be asked whether a more skillful design could be provided the applicant with the same amenity with reduced view impact on the neighbours. So I think unreasonable has been used inappropriately by the planner that's written the document for you. There's several points in the planning document that aren't covered at all in the Land and Environment Court guidelines. The first would be that they've said the planning assessment states that a key reason that the view can be cannot be protected is due to the alignment of the existing houses within these particular windows of 59 being approximately 15 to 18 metres from the rear boundary. Now, I believe that the current alignment of the houses is for the benefit of all of the residents of Little Ostermere and therefore all of the residents of Wollongong. I think there's been a fantastic job to align all of the houses in Little Ostermere so that everyone shares the view, and if this proposal was approved, it would drastically alter that. I believe they can build a house with the same amenity without altering the staggering, and I think that's what should happen here. The document further states council also considers that the existing dwelling of number 59 has a provision to extend the dwelling or the deck out towards the rear of the balcony to obtain more views. Now, I'm not aware in the council New South Wales Land Environment Court guidelines where it says that we should be forced to build on. And if we were forced to build on, we would encroach the view of number 57, our neighbours, and that is not something that we would want to do, and we don't think that's reasonable. I think it's also reasonable to point out here that the current development proposal would have a floor space to land area ratio of 0.49, which approaches the council's maximum of 0.5. We have no problem with that size dwelling being approved, but I think given the block, it would be possible to build the dwelling as I've described with the same amenity and the same floor space without encroaching on our views. The view impact assessment that was used in the document is inappropriate and underestimates the effect of the view on our house. The planning proposal uses the view impact statement, which was provided by the applicants, and this is likely to be biased for obvious reasons. Photographs used show the extent of the view loss are taken from the most favourable angles for the applicants, and assumptions made on diagrams are misleading and factually incorrect. You've seen our submission, what we think the view impact would be. I think it's important, again, to stress that it should be a qualitative rather than a quantitative assessment as per the guidelines, and I thank you for coming out and seeing the view yourself so you're aware of what it's going to do. So in summary, I believe that the proposed development, if approved, would have a devastating effect on our views, which have the highest rating according to New South Wales Land and Environment Court, and they're from the most important areas of our house. I believe that this impact could be prevented with no loss of amenity for the applicants with a more skillful design, and therefore we would hope that there would be an amendment to the submission to allow the current staggering to continue, give the amenity that's sought by the applicants, but also maintain views as per the Land and Environment Court guidelines. And thank you again for your time.
Thank you. For both of you?
I'll just add just a small comment. Obviously, Alice has covered most of our concerns. Again, we both appreciate you coming out and the full view assessment happening. We really want our neighbours to have the house that they dream of. We don't want to deprive them of that at all, nor should we. We just hope that a bit of neighbourly compassion can be shown and a bit of sharing the beautiful place that we have. I think that goes with the community that is Ostermere. We hope that we can find something that works for both.
Okay, thanks. Any questions?
No.
Yep, we understand, we're trying to understand. So we appreciate the issue. So thank you very much for your submissions. And we have got the judgment on tenacity here as well. So
thank you for the opportunity.
Thanks very much.
So I've got Mr. Khan Hayer and Bradley Curtis.
Thank you, guys. My name's Khan Hayer. I'm the owner at 61 Lawrence Hargrave Drive. I'll speak briefly and then let Brad speak more about the technical questions you may have. So my wife and I patched up this derelict house in 2014, and we've spent the last 5 years planning and saving to build our dream beach house for our family. The key questions we asked our designers was to build a substantial home, maximising our views whilst being respectful to our neighbours' views, but importantly providing us some privacy. We've had great dialogue with our neighbours at 63, who are immediately to our south, and we know that they fully intend to develop that site and have had to consider this. And I think our views are further hampered by the Green Reserve, which is to the east of Little Osty Lane, which you would have seen when you were on the site today. I feel that the most desired views are at the east end of both of our blocks. Now, prior to lodgement, we sent our intended plans to our immediate neighbours. The only objections are from number 59. And despite our house potentially being several metres closer to the beach, we offered further compromise to remove privacy screening and shorten our balcony. And despite a recommendation from planning to approve our DA, we are here today. When we designed our our house at the minute, you probably appreciate that the outlook looks straight at number 2 Little Ostie Lane. And in the design, we're trying to achieve a bit of a move diagonally, so we kind of look out down towards the beach more than across to our neighbour. It is my belief that we have submitted a considered design that complies with all DA requirements. We have no objections to our neighbours developing their site, but we do request that they do comply with council requirements under a DA. This is something I believe the current deck and skate ramp do not comply to or have. I'll let Brad continue from here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, panel. I acknowledge number 59's concerns and probably just by way of explaining, I suppose, our approach to the design is that, as you can appreciate, if the owners at number 59 are entertaining on that deck, which is south-facing deck at the moment, they look directly into the back wall of the existing building. So it doesn't afford our client a great deal of privacy. So by moving the proposed home closer to the south, it actually gives us a bit of privacy back into our internal spaces from number 59's deck. So that was the approach that we had by just pushing the home a little bit further to the south. The key, and I do appreciate number 59's comments that they appear to not want to compromise at all on their current outlook. We do talk about the element of view sharing. So, you know, as long as we're not, you know, my opinion is that, you know, as long as we still afford them what I would consider is more the Little Ostie Mere beach itself and the sand and the breaking surf and so forth, then that is uninterrupted from their back windows in their living room. The kitchen window, council's policy talks about, you know, ensuring that view loss from living rooms is important, but bedrooms and service areas, which is what a kitchen is not as critical. So that's the approach that we had. Now, in our conversations with council during the assessment process, we conceded to reducing the rear very narrow deck that we had originally at 1.2 metres wide down to 600 wide. The purpose of the deck is more, or the balcony across the back, is to allow us an opportunity to actually get some small planting element across the rear of the building itself and to break up the sheer two-storey element of the building. It also gives our client the opportunity to sort of step out onto a small area that they can look at the view and enjoy the outdoor area there. So we also then conceded to then the privacy screen, which was on the end of it. And, of course, the privacy screen we had on the deck was to afford our client a higher level of privacy in their main bedroom from overlooking off that rear deck. There was, and I sort of had made a number of comments relating to, I suppose, more of the issue of the outlook from the existing deck, and I was sort of getting a vibe more from the town planner that, you know, that was probably one of the more significant issues that the client has, or that the neighbour has at number 59. And I think that is probably driven a little bit by some of the comments that the planner has actually made in the replanning board. A deck on the south side of a house that doesn't afford any sunlight whatsoever is not directly accessible from internal living area. And as it may appear, is not actually approved by council because we can't find any record of it ever being approved. It's funny that sort of disappeared from the conversation from number 59. Now, maybe that was my misinterpretation from council staff, that was the predominant issue that the number 59 had. One thing that our client certainly suffers from is just no level of whatsoever privacy into their backyard, you know, from number 59. In fact, from number 57 further up the hill. And we're not, you know, that's cool. That was pre-existing and that was part of the situation that we have there. So what we've tried to do is still maintain a good corridor of outlook from number 59 that we believe is adequate and adopts that view sharing principle. just very quickly touch, there were a number of other objections that were lodged by the owner of number 59, one being building height. Quite clearly, the application complies with the council's development control plans in terms of building height, also complies in terms of wall heights. Building setbacks, there was an objection. I'm not sure exactly what the detail of that objection was because I haven't been privy to the exact concern with the objection on setbacks. But the building does actually comply with the building setbacks. In fact, the side boundary setback between on the northern side of the proposed building is greater than what's currently existing. And, you know, the rear setback is well in excess of the minimum requirements. There was a concern about the position of the air conditioning unit, but I think that's been dealt with in the planner's report, in that the air conditioning unit that we're placing on the northern side of the proposed home will be approximately 1.8 metres away from the number 59's garage and 6.9 metres away from any sort of habitable living space in that particular property. There was also a concern that maybe the right of carriageway, and there was an impact potentially, what we were proposing to do would be an impact on the right of carriageway. The existing retaining wall on that right of carriageway is unaffected by the proposal. I don't know what else I can add other than say that, you know, we've tried to, we did have discussions with council very early on, when these matters did raise, and we did talk about maybe sliding the home back a little bit, sliding it back so that our proposal would have a 6 metre setback instead of 6.7. That's something that we could probably concede to, and it was something we did put on the table, but council felt that it wasn't necessary, and just the adjustment to the bow piece and the removal of the screen was adequate.
Sliding it
to the west. Yeah.
Back towards the street.
Back towards the street. So we adopt a 6 metre setback. So basically just sliding it back 600 odd millimetres or 700 millimetres.
Okay. Is that all you want to say?
That's basically, yeah.
Probably just some questions. Mm-hmm. Were you able to do any of your real view assessment?
Only from what we could pick up from, you know, from sort of photographs that we had, you know, from the interior elements of that particular home from when it was on the market. We didn't offer, you know, we didn't ask to...
You didn't enter. Go in?
No, we didn't ask.
Because...
And given some of the, you know... Yeah, we probably didn't do it. We'd left that basically up to council to determine.
Yeah. We had a little bit of difficulty today using your survey because it doesn't actually tell me very much about the existing house. So normally when you're trying to assess where things are going, you usually like to know what the leading edge of the existing house is and how far forward that you might be and where the heights are.
Yeah,
so
okay, all right. So,
there was no information in relation to levels other than the ridge height?
We were asked to provide council with a copy of the original survey detail, which we did do. Did you receive that from...
Yeah, the only RL had on it was a ridge height.
A ridge height, yep.
Yeah. Is that what you had to work with?
Yeah, that's basically what we had to work with.
So can you just... It's quite, you know, kind of... real issue is how far forward of the alignment
of the existing dwelling.
The objectors from number 59 talk about there's a staggering happening.
Yeah, that's
so
yeah,
just
yeah.
How far further forward of the
2.8 metres.
That rear, really?
Of the, that's of the wall of the existing house.
The wall
not
of
the balcony,
the existing.
Not the balcony.
Not the balconies.
Yeah.
And
2.8
presumably
meters.
Not the covered terrace.
Correct. So the back wall of our building...
Back wall of your building.
The two-storey element is 2.8 metres to the south of the back wall of the existing dwelling, not the balcony.
Right. And then the... that pergola, which has got a roof over it?
No, it's an open pergola structure.
Hardwood pergola, roof cover. So that's the...
And that's at
that's the privacy 2. Screen.
That's about 2.4 metres above that existing that paving area that's at the back of that existing house. So it sits about 2.4 metres above that paving level.
Yeah, okay.
So it's single storey.
You spend a little bit of time talking about the privacy and understand the impact of privacy from the deck on number 59, but also when you look around, there's a lot of, when views are involved, there's a lot of mutual overlooking.
Mm-hmm.
There's
lot of stuff going on in privacy, but you're actually totally on view from the lane and the beach.
Yes.
So that the privacy in that backyard really is pretty well significantly impacted upon from the public spaces.
And sorry to interrupt, but I think what we were trying to do.
I'm just trying to think. I've dealt with one person, but that's the whole public.
So, in terms of the privacy within the backyard or the open space, that's there for everyone to see. Yeah, there's no way that we're going to be able to satisfactorily, and it's not expected in that locality, that people.
I'll finish up with a privacy screen.
That was on
the northern side, even on the balcony. All of the. No, I'm looking at the lower terrace. The lower terrace at RL 9.925.
That's the barbecue area. Yep.
Is got a whole privacy screen when you've just said it's probably on view from the front to
everybody. Yeah, look, the purpose of the screen, I suppose, is twofold. It is to offer number 59 some element of privacy because at the moment, backyard is not used. You know, the current owners do not, our client does not use the backyard. So if they're entertaining within that terrace space, we're trying to afford, without having it to give an impact on the number 59, or what we believe is giving an impact, some level of privacy two ways. Either, you know, our client can entertain on that terrace at the ground level and not be viewing onto the deck at the back of number 59.
Do you know where that... the top of that privacy screen comes in relation to the sill heights of the windows on number 59?
No, I'd have to get that information. Not off the top of my head,
I understand this level of analysis, because it, you know, these are quite fine issues. Did you have other questions?
Yeah, just the two enclosed floor spaces, quite large, back of the garage and for where the rainwater tanks are.
Well, the subfloor spaces, what
so
we give subfloor spaces.
So excavation and that dam. The purpose?
The purpose, I suppose, is one, ease of excavation or ease of construction. You know, it's much easier.
So which one are you talking about?
Probably
so
talking about the one where we've got the rainwater tanks, you know, underneath the building.
Which is that you've got floor space enclosed, floor space number one, which appears to be under correct. Under the building envelope.
Okay, so
the bedroom
subfloor
on
one.
Top
yeah,
of
that's
the
underneath the secondary bedrooms upstairs and the front entry for you.
Is that right?
Yep. So that's an enclosed subfloor space, and the purpose of pushing that in at the same level, I suppose, as the ground floor level, is that we can then adequately store and locate rainwater tanks. You know, within that subfloor space.
It's a big area.
It's a large area. Yeah.
For rainwater tank.
And of course, then the other subfloor space on number two is back up at ground level. That's not a deep excavation.
What is
at the
it?
Garage.
What's
it's just,
it look
it's
like?
Going to be an enclosed subfloor space with a suspended slab over the top.
Why are you taking all the dirt out?
We're not. Not there. That reinstates back to existing levels.
So
the top.
Why is it?
It's just part of the building element or the building structure. You generally show, when you're showing a ground floor, you would normally show where the perimeter of the upper level is sits in relationship to the balance of the ground floor level.
So is that the library over that?
That's the library over the top of that. But that area there where we're calling an enclosed subfloor space too, that's back up, not through that element.
I'm looking at lower floor levels of RL10, garage floor of RL9.66.
But if you have a look at our section on sheet 9, you'll pick up that we've got a core filled concrete block wall, retaining wall to engineer's details, at the back of what we're calling enclosed subfloor space number 1. Then if you relate that back to where that is positioned on the floor plan, that goes straight through to the back wall of the garage.
But that is a significant excavation to create a subfloor.
It is.
And then, but that doesn't give me a section through subfloor space 2.
No.
So what I'm looking at ground levels. In a
garage level is 9.66. Are you excavating a subfloor floor space out to RL 9.66?
Not on that whole level. Not,
How do I know that?
Okay, yeah, sure, I agree. All right.
What are you doing?
What are we doing? We're terminating the excavation at the back
Maybe
wall of the
garage. Maybe we might stop it at the back wall of the garage.
Yes, yes, we will be terminating the back wall of the garage, to answer your question.
Yes.
We're not extending all the way through underneath.
Digging to the centre of the earth. And how many cars are you getting in this garage?
Well, at the present time, ideally we'd be looking at 3 to 4 vehicles.
Yeah. And did you include that in your calculations?
Yes, in the gross floor space ratio calculations. If you refer to sheet, is it 2A?
I haven't got a 2A. I've got a 2.
2A. There's a diagram of the sub how we've calculated the gross floor space ratio.
Can I ask Space 1 is included in that as well?
No. Because it's... It would have been easier probably just not to show that the perimeter of the building above, I suppose, on that ground floor level for the sake of this argument. But, look, the intention is to excavate out to the back wall of the garage and not excavate any further beyond that.
Yeah, the subfloor
space
1 you're proposing to excavate.
Yes, we are.
It's a full
but
room.
It's an enclosed subfloor space.
Yes, and is it floor space in your calculation?
No.
It's
but it is also then deemed to be a basement because the level is underneath the ground level. It's not.
It's usually storage.
It's the ceiling of it
garage.
Is underground level, so it's not. You know, if we could start getting into the detail of where we sit in terms of ceiling levels.
But basement is storage. Basement is floor space.
Unless it's car parking.
Unless it's car parking.
That's not car parking.
Yeah. But then also the definition talks about basement exclusion under the definition under the LET.
No, it doesn't.
Well, I think it might. Yep.
You've got to keep...
Look, we can easily frame that off, not show the subfloor access door and remove that from... It is subfloor area. It's not going to be anything other than to house the rainwater tanks. We can lift the level back up if that's the concern you've got.
2.740 worth of subfloor.
Mm-hmm.
It's got ceiling heights that are room heights.
Yep. And again, that it gets to an element of the ease of the easier of the construction as well.
Mm.
You know, just being more cost effective with the construction.
Can I just ask a question, Madam Chair? When it's obvious in the interest of view sharing, and you know that view is to the beach and
mm-hmm.
across your site, and you know the importance of those lines, so that I fully understand why you want your master bedroom and sitting room and the living room to maximise those. Why have a linen room and a dressing room extending in that setback area? You said before was that your proposed dwelling was 2.8 beyond the current.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got 2.3 there shown as that glass window, which is the width of the linen room and part of the dressing room. You're not affording your client any great benefit with a view from the dressing room or a linen closet.
That, if you have a look at the elevation, that's a high set window. It's a high-level window.
No, through the building, across the site. Like what?
Sorry, I don't understand what point you're looking at.
Sorry, there's a portion of the building off the master bedroom that's a living room, a linen press.
Yes.
And then a
walk-in
wardrobe.
Yes, there's that linen press there, yes.
But your client isn't gaining a high-level view from that space.
No, I agree.
The cost of that in terms of view sharing is quite significant.
I understand what you're saying.
So just putting to you as a point of reasonableness and skillfulness, is that a good outcome?
Look, I suppose on reflection, if we took that 1 metre or that 970 millimetres out of the width of the house, or the length of the house, would that then afford a better result for the neighbour? I agree.
Well, just speaking out loudly, I've got a quite generous, very generous master bedroom and dressing room and linen and WC, and then I've got galleries and voids over.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be quite reasonable and quite easy things to do to actually deal with. What is there is a moment of staggering, and there's views available at ground floor and there's views available at first floor,
mm-hmm.
but basically, just speaking out loud, we're setting ourselves up to have this discussion. Not just on this one, but if next door decides to redevelop and it'll be moving on, it is a domino effect.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And on a site that you've got got a lovely house, quite with very generous spaces. There seems to be some quite easy solutions to actually deal with view sharing. And I have a grave concern that without the actual information in terms of sill heights, RLs of existing buildings, and that, you know, there's kind of a little bit of, this is a bit too rough and ready in terms of the analysis of views.
Okay, yeah, I'll take that on board.
So, and, you know, you mentioned just at the beginning that, you know, there might be some option to, I think, what did you say, shift the northern wing back, what about?
No, we actually made the whole, an offer to actually move, the slide the whole building back to, in its current depth, but move it towards the west by 600 or 600.
That was 600, picked well, up the, 600
yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it'll pick up, go to a 6 metre setback instead of the 6.7.
Yeah. Have you got your version of 2A with you? I just don't.
Yep.
We don't have 2A. I'm just interested to see what you did include as floor space.
And for the benefit,
it's probably on council file. So if you've got, we can get
no,
it on
no,
the
no,
file.
No.
And same with 3A, which is the definition for upstairs, which includes the area of the staircase itself, which I'd still...
Mm-hmm. It's quite an unusual interpretation in Wollongong compared to other councils that we deal with.
Wollongong's should be the same as
that's
the standard.
Not, their interpretation is the area of the staircase on the second floor. It's not deemed to be a void, therefore it needs to be counted towards floor space ratio. So we have to include the staircase twice. But
mm-hmm.
we're allowed to exclude the area of the void around the stairs.
I understand.
But Kiama, Shell Harbour, other councils I deal with, the staircase is within a void.
Okay, we'll get... We'll
and
get
it's
get
even under the current compliant development policy.
I thought Wollongong's floor space ratio definition
the wording
was
is
the
standard
template.
The wording is the standard template, but it's then the staff's
okay.
interpretation of
right.
that. And that stems out of another Land Environment Court matter that they're relying upon, where the stairwell in that particular case was actually enclosed within walls.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a void then.
All right. Okay, any other questions? While we've got architect here and...
I suppose the simple question is, mm-hmm. obviously you would be still prepared to obviously move the building and do
yes.
tweak the building.
Well, we made that
so
up
that
for 6 weeks ago.
Right, okay.
But council staff felt that the compromise of reducing the deck and removing the screen was adequate in this particular case.
All right. Okay?
Yep.
No other questions?
Okay.
You're done.
Yeah. Thank
We're,
you.
We'll take all of that under consideration
okay.
And formulate a resolution.
Yep.
Thank you very much for your assistance.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, everybody. We're going to adjourn and to debate and formulate a resolution and provide advice on this matter. As
yep.
I said earlier, we're not
yep.
the consent authority for the matter. So with that, thank you very much, and I'll let everybody go.
Sorry, Madam Chair, if we can just get that clarification on Council's interpretation for the floor space ratio, because I've argued it a number of times on other matters, and
we'll ask the officers.
Hitting my head against the brick wall all
yeah.
the time. Yeah.
All right.
If we can get clarification.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thank you.
Rightio, thank you very much. I'll declare the meeting adjourned until I close it.
Can I see that?